Hello, Women Talk Sports fans. We are back for the month of March, and we had some exciting stuff go down for the month of February. We are very excited to be back with you guys. We have a good show. We're going to talk a little bit about Danica Patrick, winning the pole, which is very excited in her exciting in her run at Daytona. We're going to preview the WNBA draft a little bit, just because March Madness is right around the corner. And of course, we will talk more about Ronda Rousey versus Liz Carmichael at UFC 157. Very exciting, making history there. We'll wrap up with Hope Solo missing the Algrave Cup due to a wrist injury. And we'll also have Scott Baer with us at the end to talk all things soccer, which should be good to have a little bit more of an outside opinion. And as usual, I am here with my co-host, Stephanie.
Hey everybody. Happy to be here. So let's just talk about Danica. She won the Daytona 500 pole. And I have to be totally honest that I don't know anything about race car driving. So when I read that, I like got an alert on my phone and I was like, "Cool, that must mean she did a good job." So I was totally blind to what this all meant. So I'm just going to break this down for you in case you also are not you don't follow Daytona race car driving. So, this is courtesy of Wikipedia, so you know that it's good. They told me that the position of the motor vehicle and its driver in the front of the grid at the starting lineup is the pole. So, if you get this position, it's because you qualified at a session where drivers were trying to get the fastest lap. So, essentially, Danica Patrick was in this session. She had the fastest lap. She clocked in at 45.817 seconds and averaged 196.4 miles per hour to win the pole. So that means that she has the top spot for the race. So basically, this is the first time a woman has ever won the pole, and she totally kicked butt. So although it doesn't mean a whole lot to me, like technically wise, 196 miles per hour is freaking fast. So, props to her for doing that. And this was a good thing because she was like almost not gonna qualify. She was kind of like not doing so hot or was gonna have to really try to qualify. So her winning this kind of saved her a little bit. So, it was
Yeah,
good.
she performed well too at the Daytona 500. I'm kind of like you. I do not follow NASCAR by any means, but I do not have anything but basic cable right now. So when it came on, we ended up watching it. She ended up finishing eighth at the Daytona 500, which is the highest any woman's ever finished at the Daytona 500. When interviewed, she wasn't very happy about her placement. She says she doesn't want to just be the first woman. She wants to beat everybody else, which is awesome. And I was following everybody on Twitter too. We were kind of tweeting up about this, and we got a couple, they might have picked up some few more NASCAR fans, at least a few more women, just because we wanted to see how she would do. She was third going into the last lap, so she faded hard, but which I don't understand how that happens in a car, but
I
that's
know. And
I'm
I think it's hard for us as runners because it's like it's a motor. I
yeah.
mean,
So
it's
I'm
just
sure it's
different.
hard. I just don't understand the fading part. It's not
Right.
like your legs lock up in that last 200 meters and you can't just go.
Maybe the wheels lock up, Kara. We don't
I don't know.
know.
But she was third going into the last lap. So she did great. Very happy for her to have kind of proved herself a little bit more. She's got a lot of haters, which I think it's mostly due to those GoDaddy commercials.
Yeah, I wish she would stop doing that. I don't hate her because of it, but it's like, come on.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Can we please stop that? But yeah, pretty much proves she's doing well and she's on the playing field she should be at.
Yeah, so good job, Danica. We're proud of you, and I will try and watch more race car driving so that I can explain it to others better next time.
Yes, I just need to know the technical aspect of it. I understand. As a runner, I understand what's going on. I just don't understand
Exactly.
how it
The
works.
technical terms like the pole. So hopefully you leave this podcast understanding a little bit better about what the poll is. So let's talk basketball, a little b-ball action here.
You gotta love March Madness. I mean, it is right around the corner. Selection Sunday is here soon. And we've got some wonderful WNBA draft prospects who are all knocking on the door for March Madness, but it's also be great to actually watch them play during this time period and see how it affects where they go in the draft.
Right, because the draft is April 15th. It's a Monday. And this is an awesome thing because this is the first time in WNBA history that the draft will be live. So this is 17 years in the making. You'll be able to catch it on ESPN2.
Yes, and we've got there's a great host of women who are going to be going into the WNBA draft. There's even some talks that some teams were like bombing on purpose just so they could have a chance to maybe get Brittany Griner, Ella Dell, or Skylar Diggins. So, you know, I have a mock draft up here in front of me. And, of course, the first one everyone says is going to go is definitely Brittany Griner.
Right.
I mean,
which I would be shocked if she wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, she can dunk. She can play. She's pretty much killed for Baylor, has led the team to amazing things, and all-around awesome player. She is a center, and she's also 6'8". So she's just an overall athlete. She's tall. She can dunk. And she's got one of those just, you know, personalities that she's going to, you know, do what it means to do to win. And they're looking to say the Phoenix Mercury will take Brittany Griner.
Yes. So then Chicago Sky has the second pick. And it looks here like Skylar Diggins will be their pick. This could all change. So we don't really know. But Skylar Diggins is her and Deladon are the two other ones that have been in the news about regarding the draft. So it could be a few different people in the mix past round, the first pick. But Skylar Diggins, like, she is a household name. People know who she is. So, and she's a guard. So it really depends on what these teams need, too. But she's from Notre Dame. She's had a solid career. And she's, like, media-wise, very popular with people.
Yeah, all around, she's going to be, you know, one of those really good players to pick up.
Right. And then Elena Deladon. I remember watching a story on her on ESPN because she decided she went to UConn right out of high school and, like, did their tryout weekend or the first week and decided that it wasn't for her. So she moved and went to Delaware, which is closer to her home, because she's very close with her sister who is sick or has some disability. And so she moved home so she could be closer, and she played volleyball, didn't want to play basketball. Then she came back and has been like a force to be reckoned with. So she is so top notch. She seems like a genuinely really awesome person. And so she's set to be picked third according to this mock draft, but she'll definitely be up there.
Yeah, and she's also, she earned a gold medal in China in 2011 playing on the basketball team for the World University Games. So she does have international experience. She's just all around. And her sister actually has cerebral palsy, excuse me. She wants to be closer to her sister, which, you know, that was, you know, at that time, I think that's probably, you know, a very good move. By her. Sometimes family does take precedence.
And everyone was telling her, like, not to do it. I mean, because she was, like, the most sought-after player out of high school. So,
yeah.
But turned out okay because she's entering the draft, so.
Yeah, and it's always cool just to see the draft and see these athletes go and, you know, get to talk and get to know who's going to go where.
Right. Markel Walker is set to go fourth, according to this mock draft, to Washington. So there's some other big names or names that you might have heard a little bit, but then it kind of gets lost after the top few picks.
We could talk more a little, you know, more about after the first three picks, but they're all pretty equal. Number eight I've heard a lot about lately is Tiana Hawkins, but that might just because she shares my last name. So I might be
Ooh.
seeing her a little bit more in the news. But there are some really good players. It's a really big year for WNBA just to pick up these players, and it's going to be awesome to see what happens during March Madness and how it goes. Will Brittany Griner, take the Baylor Bears all the way to the top again? Notre Dame's been doing awesome this year, along with Stanford. So it'll be a good year to watch for March Madness.
Yeah. So we're all excited, and we'll have more info about that in our next podcast next month. Okay, let's get down to the fight, Kara. We got Ronda Rousey and Liz Carmouche in UFC 157. That was like awesome.
It's amazing that we have come so far that we're okay with women beating each other up on the UFC. And that, I was actually having this conversation with I guess he's a sports professor. He's personal friends of ours, and he was, well, it's kind of hard to see women's sports where you go into something like UFC and it, does become a little bit more about publicity and money. But it's also awesome because we're finally getting that chance to, be just as good as the men. I think the, first of all, it was history making because it was the first female fight in UFC history.
And they were the main event, which is big too.
It was the main event. And on top of that, their lovely commissioner or the head of the program had to bite his words about women never being able to fight in UFC. So it was great to see that. Secondly, saw a couple of days later that it brought in a ton of people to watch and was like pretty much one of their top watched pay-per-view events.
Well, it's not surprising. Like everyone on my Facebook, everyone on Twitter were talking about it. And a lot of my friends on Facebook are not into specifically women's sports. So I have some that definitely are, but it was surprising to see some people that I wouldn't expect know about this fight and be interested in it. So hopefully it's not just this one time because it's the first female fight, but hopefully they continue to be interested in it so that they can keep making that dollar.
And UFC has signed a host of fighters. There is definitely more information on Women Talk Sports. Wombat Sports, who contributes to us, has stuff out every single day. But they have signed a host of new women fighters, so there will be more to come. The only thing is that they do only have, I think, one or two weight classes, so they can't sign as many fighters as were in Invicta.
But still making progress because who knows, maybe they will have more, they'll have to open it up a little bit in the future.
Yeah, I'm assuming they will. This is definitely an area of growth for women. And, especially with boxing being in the Olympics finally for women, this is something that will probably continue to grow.
And I guess we never said like what happened in the fight, so we'll
Yeah, go
tell
ahead
you.
and recap. We were too excited that it just actually happened.
And we just wanted to keep you waiting so the anticipation would build. Ronda Rousey won the fight. She beat Carmouche via armbar submission. So I just, in the replays, like the announcers kept talking about how many like shoulders or elbows she's dislocated, and it freaks me out. And this is why I say if I didn't have to be harmed, I would totally be an MMA or UFC fighter. But that's not reality, so I can't do it.
No, as a runner, we are always terrified of getting injured.
I'll leave it to them because they do a great job.
I can't wait to actually see more of this. I'm very excited.
All right, let's talk about your girl.
My girl. So we are now past the Olympics, as everyone knows, and there's a lot going on in soccer, which we'll talk with Scott later about. But some of the biggest news is that Hope Solo is going to be missing the Algrave Cup due to a wrist injury. She's finally having some surgery on it, and that's when, the national women's team has just told her to do it. And I'm a little excited about this, which is awful to say about her missing, but I somewhat think it might be better for the team not to have her there. We all know Hope Solo likes to cause a lot of drama. And that's something that I don't know if a team who's trying to bring in new players is supposed to happen. There's some other people they've left off the roster, including Heather Mitz, due to age, we think. Tom Sermana, you know, gets to pick the roster. He's the new coach. So there are going to be some replacement goalies, and I'm very excited to see how they do. Nicole Barnhart, Jill Loden, and Ashley Harris will be battling for the starting job in Portugal. It'll be interesting to see if any goalkeepers can step up and take Hope Solo's place. We all know she's a great goalkeeper, but at the same time, you know, the coach might see these other goalkeepers are, you know, just as good, and he just doesn't want to have to deal with the drama of Hope Solo anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure that would be nice.
Yeah, and, you know, this is something that I hate to be catty about, because she has every right to her opinions, but, you know, sometimes you're just having, you just wonder if a player is worth the drama that she causes.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the articles that I've read, a lot of the players are hoping she gets back. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be that big of a drop from Solo to a number two goalie. We've had there's some great goalies in the U.S. They just haven't had a chance to actually start. And, you know, I had my sisters and my mother were actually at the last game Hope Solo played, and they said it was definitely affecting her play, her injury. And goalies get injured a lot just because of how physical it is. So it's not surprising that she's having to have surgery.
So we just have to wait and see.
Yes, we'll have
to turns out.
How wait and see and hope that during that time period she doesn't get into too much trouble with her husband.
Oh, gosh. Did they actually get hitched? I thought they were just engaged.
I think they actually ended up getting hitched.
Wow. Good job, Hope.
Yes.
Congrats from Women Talk Sports.
Yes, into that scary, scary situation.
Yes.
So, with that being said, I'm glad to introduce our guest onto this show, Scott Vyer. I'm hoping I'm saying your name right.
Okay, first, Kara, it's Vyer, not there. It rhymes with liar, although I'm not one.
That's good. You can still stay on the show, then, if you're not a liar. We want to hear the truth about soccer.
Okay, well, also with the Algarve Cup, I'm actually glad to see Tom Sermani take more young players so that we don't have the same 18 to 20 players that we see at every tournament that we have sort of had on the national team for the last 4 or 5, 6 years.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. So we'll see some new faces out there this time.
Yeah, I was actually impressed with how Kristen Press did in the Scotland friendlies back in February. And hopefully she will be able to translate that to being a more central part, active part of the women's national team going forward, as we have players right now out due to pregnancy, and Abby Wambach is still, to best of my knowledge, battling knee issues.
Mm-hmm.
As for the NWSL, Portland definitely got the mother load in the national team allocation. In that they ended up with two complimentary players to Christine Sinclair that it doesn't make any possible sense that they should have been able to get, that being Alex Morgan and Karina LeBlanc. Once Sinclair was set to go to Portland, there should have been a list of 6 or 8 players that could not be sent to Portland. Morgan, LeBlanc, Aaron McLeod, the other Canadian goalkeeper, Wambach, Solo, because it's just too big an advantage at the outset.
Yeah.
That said, I think the Chicago Red Stars have done the best since allocation to build their team using free agency, using the college draft, using the supplemental draft to build the team around the concept that they have had since going down to WPSL in 2011, which is a hometown type organization where a lot of the players on that roster played in Notre Dame or come from the greater Chicago area. How Kansas City, a team that most people thought would get the dregs of the allocation pool, where have been able to build their squad and actually seem to be pretty competitive It's a little bit of a surprise. Now, Seattle is a hot mess right now because of this of the players they were allocated. One's injured, one's pregnant, and the third one will be is playing in France for the first half of the year. So, I mean, the three Americans they were that Seattle was allocated, none of them will be with the team at the start of the season. Teresa Noyola from Mexico, I think they are going to get her back in a couple of weeks, or else she would have been coming back mid-season from Ado Den Haag in Holland.
Jeez.
Yeah, Seattle just made a trade with Chicago to get Keelan Winters for next year's first-round draft pick and future considerations, which would be another U.S. national team player.
What other? So I know there's Kansas City, Chicago, Seattle. Isn't there something out east?
Yeah, Western New York, and they've got Abby Wambach and Carly Lloyd. Sky Blue FC, which is based in New Jersey, and their big players are Christy Rampone and Jillian Lloyden, I believe.
So out west will be, or out east will be pretty solid. They've got some players out there that'll keep things interesting.
Yeah, Boston looks to be pretty good, although the way that the league has set up the teams, they've done a great job, I would say, in trying to tamp down the legacy teams, those being Chicago, Western New York, and Boston, teams that have been in that have sort of been in existence since WPS went under, playing in various leagues. And the NWSL seems to have done a job, if you would, in trying to make sure that those teams don't start out with a huge advantage by being able to by bringing back most of their players.
So it still seems like they're trying to figure everything out here.
Yeah, there's
Nothing's settled.
nothing settled, even though opening day is 6 weeks away.
Yeah. Do you have hope that they will be able to figure it out within 6 weeks?
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that everything will be, that we will have a league in existence and games on the field that propel the game forward in this country and do it in a more financially responsible way that uses a lot more local control and puts the onus of survival on the individual markets rather than the league as a whole.
Very cool. So, before we go, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your organization in Milwaukee. Give us the breakdown. What's happening?
Okay, well, I'm managing director and chief soccer officer for Milwaukee United Soccer Club. What we are trying to do here in the Brew City is give older high school players and college players who don't get a lot of attention, who maybe haven't been able to play club due to cost or logistics or the perception that they may not. Maybe they don't have elite level talent, give them an opportunity to play and translate that for high school players, be able to translate their success on the field into playing in college and getting an education. And for college players, it's an opportunity in the summer to come home and play competitive soccer. Right now, I've got about half the roster signed for this
Awesome,
year.
congrats.
I'm still looking for players. So if you're from Milwaukee and are playing college soccer right now or did play and have graduated, hit me up on email, MilwaukeeUnitedSC@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at BackseatGaffer or Milwaukee United.
Awesome. We wish you luck on that front. Let us know if you do get anyone from this podcast, if anyone contacts you, and hopefully you'll join us again. Maybe closer to the season starting off, or once the first game's done, we'd love to have you back to talk about it. So I guess everyone out there, feel free to send him a message. You can follow us at Women Talk Sports on Twitter, and follow me at Steph M. Pearl and Kara at Kara Bird on Twitter. You can email us at podcast@womentalksports.com, and we will be back with you next month, giving you more sporting news.